Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Joe DeCosmo, who is the Chief Analytics Officer of Enova. Joe, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Karen. I'm glad to be here.
So we're here to talk about something very specific that Enova does, which is your Enova Decisions platform. It's really your analytics as a service capability.
And I think that's what we want to talk about today. So what is driving the interest in decision analytics? And I want to get to your analytics as a service philosophy as well. But let's start with the basics. What's driving it?
Yeah. Well, I think there is just an overall recognition among startups and longtime, you know, established players alike, whether it's in banking or insurance or telco and other places, that being more data-driven, be more analytics-driven, and to be able to render more real-time decisions with clients, or with customers, really, right, as customers engage with them, is really driving all the interest that we see around decision analytics and decision management. Clearly, you know, that's something we've been doing in our roots since we started in 2004, being an online lender. So, you know, using analytics and data and then building decision flows, automated decision flows around those models has been what we've been doing from the start. And now with Enova Decisions, we're able to, you know, offer that to some, you know, customers outside of our industry. But it's hard to do, right? It's hard to do it right, and it's hard to have the infrastructure to do it well and to have the right talent and teams to build the models and build the infrastructure. So that's where we see a lot of interest for, you know, third-party solutions as well that help companies do this.
So is that where this notion of analytics as a service, so any one institution or relying party doesn't have the robustness either in terms of data set or data scientists to analyze it or, you know, technology infrastructure to run it and deliver real-time decisioning to do it in-house, and you're better off leveraging the scale of a platform that does, provided obviously that it is generating decision analytics that relate to what you do as a business.
Yeah, and the way I think of it is it's hard to have all the pieces you need to do that well. So many companies have good analytics and good data scientists that can, you know, analyze the company's data and build good models that are used for fraud or credit risk or customer operations, whatever it is you're trying to solve for. But they lack the technology and technical infrastructure to be able to turn those into automated decision flows, right? And so they may have the analytics talent, but not the IT talent or the IT infrastructure. And then other companies just are lacking on all of those fronts.
Yep.
And so, again, I think that being our sort of core DNA and our heritage, we've solved for that and are able to help companies move faster in that respect when it comes to, again, model-driven, automated decisioning.
So how does a third party, someone who says, all right, I get that I'm not capable of doing this myself and I want to leverage someone else's platform, how do they know whether or not doing that is going to yield a result that is beneficial to them? I don't know if I'm asking the question the right way, but obviously,
yeah,
if you're going to support underwriting, you better make sure that your way of decisioning consists with their philosophy in making decisions. How do you get that match correct?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I always recommend an approach of working backwards. So what is the outcome you're seeking, or the end point of that decision? So if it's a credit risk or underwriting, you know, you're at the end of the day, you're seeking to make a better credit decision with your customers, and ideally one that is done in a objective, automated, real-time way, as opposed to a manual, slow way. And so I think first is understanding what that outcome you're seeking of the decision is, and then think about all the data you need to render that decision. So again, in a bank, right, in a traditional bank where they might have credit models already or credit rules and policies already, what data goes into that model or credit policy, and understand all those data pieces, and then look at the decision flow and identify where a model and automation would improve the outcome,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
once you have a good understanding of those three pieces, then you can really understand the value of automating that process either in a platform you build or in a platform you buy from a third party. And that's what I think a lot of folks get ahead of themselves, right? And they jump right to, we need to have a new modeling methodology, a new platform, but they haven't thought through the whole decision flow thoroughly to understand what they need to either build or buy. And
yeah.
So that's the thing we work through, you know, with our clients all the time. You know, many of them have existing credit models and policies and decision flows. They're just manual. And so, you know, how do we, you know, rebuild that manual flow in an automated and real-time way?
Got it. You know, one of the conversations we had at Innovation Project, I think you would have really enjoyed this. It was led by the Harvard PhD mathematician who wrote the book Weapons of Mass Destruction.
Yeah,
and,
sure, I know it well.
And, you know, she talked a lot, as you well know from reading the book, about the biases that are built into models, not intentionally in most cases, but just because they reflect the state of an organization and a desired outcome, and that perpetuates decision making that may not always be in the best interest of consumers or businesses, and in fact not even the institution. How do you think about, when you're building your models, how do you think about making sure that you don't have bias built in, particularly when you think about having it relied upon by third parties that may have a different set of outcomes desired than you do?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've actually spoken specifically on this topic as well, and in relation to some of her writings too. It's a good question and a valid concern. But when you build models that are used for decision making, there's things you can do on the front end through sampling, you know, good sampling methodology and other approaches to make sure you're not introducing bias in your models when you build them.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the back end, have good controls in place to make sure that the result doesn't start to generate some kind of some unintended bias, right? And so you need some tests and controls on the back end of that as well. And a really simple example are the standards around, you know, fair lending,
yep.
Fair lending rules. And, you know, our models get tested all the time, and we have third parties that test our models for, you know, fair lending impact or disparate impact, as they call it. But as models become more machine learning driven and more automated is the kind of tests that we do on a scheduled basis, you need to be doing those all the time, right? You need to be monitoring your models to make sure that your model is not picking up some underlying bias that is now being institutionalized into the model through a machine learning algorithm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you need to have good monitoring and good controls in place to check that on an ongoing basis. The thing I believe very strongly is at the end of the day, a model-driven decision, one that you can make giving a controlled set of data and a well-built model that makes a decision and takes the decision out of a subjective process and makes it more of an objective decision, you can have more controls over that process, and you can make sure that the model is built in a way that doesn't incorporate bias at the beginning and then doesn't sort of begin to be biased over time. And so you can actually control it better, I think, than when you leave the decision in more of the subjective manual realm.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, you still get, when you have algorithmic driven decisions, you still get better, more objective and more consistent decisions at the end of the day, but they take work. You know, right. it's not the set it and forget it approach to a model. You have to constantly monitor that model and monitor the outputs that it's creating.
Do most banks understand that?
Yes, I think they do. And I think actually that's been part of the reason why machine learning and more modern algorithmic techniques have not been as prevalent in credit risk and underwriting. Because of this need to do some extra work to make sure that you're not, out of compliance with your models. So I think they do understand that and understand the challenges, and we do as well. And so I think there's a slower adoption of some of these techniques in these very high compliance, highly regulated decisions.
So I want to talk about the output. So we're talking about now the development of these algorithmic models to support decision making and often in a bit of a different way that requires this ongoing monitoring, etc. Is there a challenge on the side of the institution that's now taking all of this data and internalizing it for external usage? Does that part of the business have to change as well? I'm thinking about inputs and outputs. So now I'm talking about the output part of the organization. Does that make sense?
I think so, and yeah, it does. It does change. So if you look at, for example, some of the credit bureaus have come out with new credit scores that are machine learning based, and their claim is twofold. One is that they're better scores, they're more predictive credit scores, and then secondly, they've built into those scores the compliance piece of it around fair lending and adverse action and those kinds of things. So they've overlaid on top of their score some additional output that give the user the control to make sure that they're being compliant. Now, we have an additional challenge because we, on the lending side of our business, we don't use those pre-built credit scores in our models. We build our own credit scores. And so we have to, as we move into more of the machine learning algorithms, we need to build some of those same outputs and controls around the scores. So it's definitely challenging, and it is changing the way some of the data providers think about the scores and the outputs that they create.
When you think about the banks making decisions about buy build, is how much of that is a function of the ROI related to efficiencies and cost control inside the organization, and what percentage of it is based on I'm going to get a better output, therefore this is going to enable my top line to improve?
Yeah, you know, Karen, I think it's all really driven by the latter, the top line, that they see that new competitors, online competitors, are using these technologies and making faster, better decisions about customer interactions, and so. So they view this as a way to keep pace and stay competitive with these new, online entrants into their space, Enova included, right? Enova International included on the lending side of the business. And so so I think it's all that. I don't think it's driven a lot by efficiencies and internal cost savings.
When we want to describe the kinds of things that you guys are doing to really help banks do a better job at that, specifically, what are you enabling for them?
Yeah. So our real focus of Enova Decisions and why we're so excited about it is, again, this focus on being able to design and implement and operate an automated real-time decision flow for another company. That decision flow might be around marketing, or it might be around credit risk, or it might be around customer operations and retention. But being able to design and host that decision flow on our platform that we have, and then be able to build and deploy all the models that are needed to optimize that decision flow. That's really the thing that we are most excited about, and what we're offering our clients and the clients we're engaging with now, whether it's telco or banking or insurance. We have engagements in all those areas. That's, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. And the analytics and the data is one piece of it. The decision flow and then the hosting of that decision flow to make it available through APIs and render an automated real-time decision at the end of it is really key. And there we're getting a lot of interest, and we're finding a lot of need across all sorts of industries for this kind of a service.
I was going to ask you, where do you see the pockets of demand coming from, geographically as well as type of institution?
Yeah, I mean, geographically, we're focused here in the U.S., so we're talking mostly, although we do have a client on our platform based in China, and we are talking a few conversations in a couple other countries as well, countries where we already do business, so Brazil and the UK primarily. But geographically, the bulk of our work is here in the U.S. with U.S. companies. Industries, it's really... again, I mentioned telco. We see a lot of interest and need there in telco, and primarily wireless telco. Banking and credit and lending, clearly, it's our heritage. It's pain points for many of the traditional banks in other areas. And then insurance being an area that is really starting to be disrupted now by what's called the insurtech scene. There are startups both on the brokerage and carrier side that are doing very interesting things online. But then also the traditional providers are looking for ways to be more efficient and be more more automated with the way they interact with many of their customers and prospects. So we see a lot of interest there. The use cases are generally a couple of areas. One is fraud, for sure. So as these companies, you know, become more digital, or as the startups start online, fraud is a number one concern. You know, you're not sitting across the desk from your agent, you know, applying for insurance. And so fraud, a key area for us that we're having engagements in all those industries. Credit risk, obviously. So wherever a credit decision is being made, and not just in lending, but again, in wireless, where they're making a credit decision on what, you know, plan or equipment you're going to qualify for, et cetera. And then the last piece is really, and we see a lot of this right now, on customer conversion and retention. So how can our platform enable a better customer experience that increases conversion rate? So it's just more automated and faster, and so they'll increase their conversion rates. And in retention, how can we enable decision flows to allow for fast customer interventions to improve improve customer retention? So those are sort of the use cases that span, you know, all those industries, right? And we're engaged in and really see as our platform for analytics and decision flows can enable all those areas.
Yeah, I think about the trend in moving different parts of, you know, an organization outside, or leveraging external capabilities. You know, we've done it forever with payroll, of course, and lots of what's considered back office types of things. You know, cloud services hosting our IT infrastructure. It's interesting to see, you know, this is such a mission critical piece of an organization that there's now this trend to leverage the scale of existing platforms to make better what organizations that need to make these big decisions have always done internally. I think it's an interesting trend.
Yeah. We're excited about it. I mean, we see a lot of interest and demand, and think we've got a, you know, a real solution that can help many of these companies move more quickly into data-driven, automated, you know, digital decisioning.
Yep. Well, Joe, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I really enjoy learning about the things that you're doing and about the business generally. So.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Yeah.